In a time where props ruled the world, we are going to talk about them. Sorta. I mean, we're going to meander while we talk, but yeah, we're going to do those things. Here on the Prop History Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Prop History Podcast. My name is Mike.
I'm Greg.
And we talk about props because that's what we do. I mean, largely we talk about props. Mostly we just meander around and forth around the subject, but then we get back to it, sort of.
Yeah, I like how that we've just determined that we're going to have a topic, and if we get to it, then great.
Yeah, if not, so be it. Because I know that we started with the lofty ideal of just talking about the props and where they came from and blah, 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 and it's not nearly as fun.
No,
to
it's
chit-chat.
It's hard not to just become total geeks.
Yeah, and that's fine. Well, today is the 1st of January, 2021.
Yay.
2020 is officially over.
Yay, thank God.
I know.
I hope.
Well, we'll see what happens. But I am fresh off of getting the first dose of my COVID vaccine.
How was that?
It was, getting the vaccine was just like getting the flu shot. But for the first day, I had a lot of issues with body soreness. And where I got the shot at is super sore still. But other than that, it was just, I felt worn down. Not so bad.
Yeah, I mean, I know you have a weird work schedule anyhow, but did your work give you time off to recover from?
Yeah, pretty much after I got the shot, because it was through my employer. Right. And for full disclosure, I work at a hospital, doing maintenance at a hospital. Then they just said, cheers, off you go, when
nice.
I went home. So yeah, I had yesterday to recover, and then my weekend started today, so it worked out well.
Yay.
I know.
Well,
I
good.
Know. Yeah, so ostensibly today, on this episode of the Prop History Podcast, we're going to be talking about your and mine, probably one of our favorite films.
Yes, definitely my favorite science fiction movie.
Without a doubt, yeah. It's easily up there in the top three for my favorite science fiction films, and to not continue to dance around it, it's The Fifth Element.
Yes, Luc Besson's masterpiece.
Oh, it's magnificent. Die Hard in Space is what it's sometimes referred to as, because Bruce Willis pretty much just plays Bruce Willis in every movie he's in.
Yeah.
So it's sometimes referred to as Die Hard in Space.
And a lot of Blade Runner.
Yeah, there's a lot of Blade Runner, but it's I love that movie so much.
In a sad note, you know, we just lost Tiny Lister.
I know, the president, he passed away.
That was sad.
It sucks. Ah, 2020 eats an ass.
Yeah.
Is there anything good about 2020?
No, I got nothing.
Can you think of any good thing that came out of 2020?
I discovered the Sorry Girls on YouTube. I really
what
like
are they?
They're these two young ladies. They're like in their probably late 20s, maybe pushing 30 at this point. They do DIY stuff. And like their very first video from 10 years ago was them in college teaching how to make a Sharpie marker dress.
Yeah.
And now they own their own company, and
oh, nice.
They do YouTube videos and have like 10 million viewers, and they do DIY stuff around the house or people's apartments or taking stuff from Goodwill and turning it into treasures. And
oh, that's fantastic.
These young ladies from Canada who do awesome stuff.
I would have to say that the one good thing that's come out of 2020 is more people wash their hands after they use the restroom now. Than did before.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I would say that's probably it.
Yeah,
because not a whole lot.
Well, we met this year.
We did. We met this year. Our friendship began. We started this podcast in 2020, technically. Although the first episode just came out on the same day we're recording this.
Well, that's serendipitous.
Yeah, sort of. There have been some good things in 2020, I suppose. But for the most part, it's just been a giant train wreck.
Yeah.
But now it's over, so we have a whole new year to try to make things better.
I was watching Death to 2020 last night.
I watched that last night as well.
And I like the line where it says something about comparing 2020 to a shit show and a train wreck, but that wouldn't be fair to shit or trains.
Trains, right. it was so fun last night to watch that. And I didn't realize that was Hugh Grant.
Oh, yeah.
Until the credits rolled, because he looks so different in that.
No, I knew it right away. I knew that voice.
Yeah, I didn't. I just thought, like, he's familiar, but I don't know why.
Yeah.
And then I realized it was Hugh Grant.
I somehow made it through Christmas season without watching Love Actually, so I need to fix that.
I managed to get through the Christmas season without watching almost any of the classic Christmas films, like Christmas Story and It's a Wonderful Life and all that stuff.
We did watch It's a Wonderful Life. Though Becky, my wife... is insistent that we watch the colorized version, which feels like
blasphemy.
Because she's weird. I don't know.
That's not how it's done.
I mean, I love you, honey, if you ever listen to this, but yeah.
No. Yeah, no. It's, what is it? Muppet Christmas Carol and Die Hard. Those are our two that we go to. Because Die Hard's one of the best Christmas
sure.
movies ever
yeah,
made.
Yeah, yeah, so. Yeah. Yeah, Becky's is Die Hard. Mine's Love Actually. So,
really?
Yeah, I love that movie.
Nice, nice, nice. Well, it's now 2021. We can forget about 2020 now.
Presumably.
Presumably. And we can talk about what we came here to talk about if we want.
No, yeah, that'd
be great. 1997's The Fifth Element, directed by Luc Besson and starring Bruce Willis, Mila Jovovich, and Gary Oldman, a pretty classic actor to have in pretty much all of Luc Besson's films.
Chris Tucker,
Tiny Lister, of course, who just recently passed away, and of
Brian
course,
Brian James.
Sir Ian Holm.
Oh, Ian Holm, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of really good actors in that, and they all have really good scenes, too, so...
Yeah.
I absolutely love that film. I know you do too, because the shop that we're actually recording this in your shop this time.
Yes.
And looking around, there's a lot of Fifth Element stuff in here.
Yeah, so. I have a casting of one of the Mangler's heads and castings off of screen use Fifth Element stones and screen use gun and castings of a gun.
And you've got a really, really nice Mangler grenade in your shop house.
Yeah, I do.
And interestingly, the Mangler heads, and I found this out a little while ago, there were, I believe, four different sculpts of the Mangler head that were done. And then they just recycled them for all the different Manglers on screen.
I know that Kino and Agnot had very different sculpts.
Yep, and I think because they were the ones that were heroes.
Yeah.
Because there were two that were made, because there's the one that's sometimes referred to as the fat Mangler. He's the big dude that shows up in the fight with Mila Jovovich in the hotel room at Flotsam Paradise. And his is, like, there you see, like, three different versions of that because they just add different accessories to him. But it's... They put that mask on a big actor, and that's why it looked kind of expanded like that.
So Alan Rusko, I don't know if you know who that is, played Kino. He was the actor inside Kino's costume. And actually, I used to have a cat named Kino that was named after that. But several years ago, I acquired two of the screen-used hands.
Yeah.
And I ended up meeting Alan Rusko at a convention. It might have been Celebration 3. When that was being done here in Indianapolis. And for some reason, they weren't allowed to sign any autographs that were not Star Wars autographs. But I gave him the second hand that I had. And so he still has that, apparently.
What was his association with Star Wars?
He played Plo Koon, and he did a couple of other roles. But, like, there were also a couple of other people that did, like, those same roles. It's weird. Like,
okay.
It's like, hey, you fit the costume. You're going to wear this today.
Yeah, you're the stunt actor that goes in here today kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty cool. But I know that the animatronics for, like, Agnot and the ones that you actually see their faces move, which was largely just Agnot. I think there was only one other that had it. If you look on the back of their costume, they have what looks like a backpack. On. It's like a piece of armor that goes down their back. That was actually what they used to hide all the wiring and the servos for that. One of them came up for sale on Prop Store not too long ago.
Nice.
And it had the story in it of how they kind of did the animatronics for those heads. And one of those heads, the animatronics itself, still exists. And I believe it's in Luc Besson's collection because he has the original stones as well.
Nice.
And then you have a bit of a story involving the... what are they called? The big brass guys with chicken heads.
Oh, the Mondo Shi ones.
The Mondo Shi ones. Why couldn't I remember that? Yes.
So years ago, I was...
Greg has a lot of stories like this.
I have a lot of stories. So I was in Florida, I'm going to say 12 years ago, and I had found this prop company that was in Orlando, and they sold, like, movie props, and they had movie props, but they also... Oh, I know why I wanted to go there, because they sold, like, stuff from Disney. Like, you know, it's Disney, like, hey, we're going to redo this bedroom and a hotel, and so we're going to sell the lamps. And they would buy stuff like that. And I love Disney, love Disney. And I kind of would like to have had some cool things. So I found out where this company was, and they went out of business. but they had this warehouse, this abandoned warehouse that that was just in the middle of nowhere, doors wide open, and I walked right in, and they had all of their props just sitting there in this warehouse that nobody else was near.
Just out in the open for anybody to get in.
Yeah, I just walked in, and there's the bus from Speed, and Arnold Schwarzenegger's motorcycle from Terminator 2, and Heather Graham and Stasis from Lost in Space, the movie.
Oh, wow.
And there were a couple of things, but there was the cockpit, the Mondo Shiwan cockpit from The Fifth Element.
Right, the scene where the ship crosses the border and then gets attacked.
Yes.
And the stones get lost. And isn't there there's one sitting sort of level and then the other two are at angles? Isn't that how it was in that cockpit?
That I don't remember. I just remember walking in and being holy crap, this is the freaking...
The Mondo Shiwan cockpit.
Mondo Shiwan cockpit. And you see this display, this translucent, I want to say green display, a heads-up display kind of thing in front of him. And, I totally thought about just ripping it off and stealing. I could have honestly probably backed up a truck and loaded up the whole damn thing, and nobody would have noticed.
But it's gone.
Yeah. I am not that person.
Right. Do you know what happened to it?
No, I have no idea. I don't even remember what the name of the prop company was.
Oh, that's a shame. I know that only one of the Mondo Shiwan costumes exists now, and it's the original maker that made them for the film has it. Because they destroyed a lot of the props, and for some reason they wanted those destroyed, but the maker of them convinced them to let him keep one. So he's based in France. And he still owns the original. And that's the only surviving one now.
I should go to France.
I know. I want to go to France, too. But unfortunately, we're trapped in our own country right now.
Oh, my God. They're never going to let us leave. Last March, I was supposed to have gone to Switzerland to visit my cousin. And we couldn't go. And I'm like, hey, just put us on the schedule for this March. And it's this March isn't going to happen either.
Well, this past September, my wife Erica and I, we were actually planning on going to Pripyat, to Chernobyl. And a couple other countries in Eastern Europe, just because neither one of us have ever been to Eastern Europe. And it was obviously not going to happen because of COVID, but yeah, that was our plan that was ruined, plus Dragon Con, plus Gen Con, plus every other convention that should have happened, but obviously didn't because everything went sideways.
I want to go to Chernobyl.
I do too. I really want to go to Chernobyl because it's I believe it's a UNESCO World Heritage Site now, and also it's an example of man's arrogance, truth be told.
Yeah.
And that is it happened when I was a very tiny child, but I still remember a lot of the fallout from it and all the
stuff. How old are you?
I'm 40.
Okay.
It happened the year I was born. So it was I just remember how scared people were for years afterwards.
Man, I felt like I was much older than that.
Yeah.
Because I'm 48, but.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it is what it is. I mean, we can't travel right now, but it's best we don't until this gets sorted out.
Well, bring me home a souvenir.
I would.
As long as it doesn't glow.
It's Chernobyl.
Oh, yeah.
You don't. Actually, it's fun because the way that they do it is they've got these different companies that are licensed to take people in there.
Yeah.
Because it's a military checkpoint you have to cross through to get into it. And they actually have gift shops. Where you can you can buy a dosimeter and you can buy a T-shirt and you can buy a magnet and all this other stuff and bring it back, which of course I will because I'm a sucker for that stuff.
Does a T-shirt says my dad went to Chernobyl and all I got was radiation poisoning?
Right. Well, it actually, of course, as is tradition, because jokes, everything glows. The magnet glows in the dark. Sure. The shirt glows in the dark, etc. But as I understand it, the radiation level in Pripyat itself. If you get near the famous Ferris wheel, because it's steel and steel soaks up radiation, the radiation is still quite high, but it's not the background radiation is really not too much more than what you get every day anyway.
Yeah.
Outside. But you get near large steel structures and stuff, the radiation increases because radiation holds, sure, or steel holds radiation. So
ride the Ferris wheel, but you could never use the microwave.
And you could never, ever get off the Ferris wheel. I wouldn't want to get near it because the pictures I've seen of it recently is that it's just falling apart because it hasn't been maintained in 40 years. So
yeah, maybe not.
But still, it would be cool to walk through a true ghost town, like a ghost city like that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that would be awesome. Yeah.
And then also it's super inexpensive there to travel. Nice. There. So Getting there is the expensive part, but then once you're there,
yeah,
you know, 5-star hotel for like $40 a night.
That would be nice.
Not so bad.
Nah.
But we're also looking at going to Budapest and a couple of other cities in Eastern Europe.
We'd planned a trip for the eastern part of Europe, like, you know, Zagreb and Budapest, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
I really want to go to Budapest because they have a pinball museum where you pay a cover charge to get in, and then it's all free play once you get in there. I'm a huge fan of pinball. And they have one of the few surviving gladiator machines. It's the largest pinball machine in the world. The ball itself is actually a cue ball from a pool table.
That's a big ball.
It's enormous. It's a gigantic machine. I've never played one. I've never seen one that works. I've seen one in my life that it wasn't functional, but I've never played one, and they have one. So
I have a pinball machine that holds a bunch of stuff on it.
I'm looking at it right now. It's a really nice Star Wars pinball that's worked really, really well as a table for all your R2 parts.
Well, I'll get the R2 finished, and then...
And then you can stack something else on it.
Yeah.
That table works, though, doesn't it?
Yeah. The LED display is a little wonky these days, and I don't know why, but...
Well, there's a guy here in Indy that does... Yeah. Repair work on those. So,
but that costs money.
I know it costs money. You can spend that money on parts.
Yeah.
So I understand the problem.
Yeah. All right, fifth element.
Right, fifth element.
What you got on your list?
Oh, what do I got on my list? Let's see. Well, let's see. What fifth element props do I own? Actual screen use fifth element props. All I have are the armor plates from the one of the Mangalores, actually from Kino, which I purchased from you.
Yes.
But I also have a set of the stones, the Mangalore grenade. I actually spent a lot of time hunting down the parts to build accurate replicas of the Mangalore grenade.
So I know that there's the handle's a flashlight, mm-hmm. but what else is in that?
So almost every part of it is bespoke except for the flashlight handle and mm-hmm. then the knob on the end of it, which the knob you see when in the scene where he says count to 10 and he turns the little knob. That is a RS Components 509973 potentiometer knob. I know this because I spent so long looking for them. They were made back in the 90s, and they have not been in production in 20 years. And when you find them, they're either in Australia or England for some reason. That's almost exclusively where they're at.
Oh, sure.
And they were a part of an oscilloscope. At least that's the theory. No one's really ever found out what they were intended for. But they're also, that same knob is also on the ZF-1, the infamous ZF-1 rifle weapon system thing that Gary Oldman uses through the movie.
So several years ago, I was actually building a ZF-1. And again, most of it's bespoke, although I don't know what you know about it. But I know that there is that vernier dial. There is a little torch.
Yep, there's a little butane torch end on the end that's supposed to be representative of a flamethrower.
Yeah.
There is an Estes bullpup model rocket,
yes,
which is the missile from it. And you see those same rockets on the big modified 50 caliber machine gun they have in the Opera House when they're firing at Bruce Willis. They have a big, huge machine gun, which is just a modified 50 caliber. But it has two rockets on the side they ultimately shoot at him. And those are also the same Estes model rockets that they use to make that from the ZF-1. I do know a huge amount of it is custom machined, but there's a bunch of found parts on it as well, and I don't know what they all are.
I know that the pop-up scope at the top where the vernier dial is, the body of that is the Voyager model kit.
Isn't it one of the Cardassian ships?
Because
there's some details across the bottom that are a Cardassian mm-hmm. model ship, and then there's another Voyager
part.
I think it's a Jem'Hadar ship that's used up there, and I can't remember. I saw a whole list of all the parts used to make it.
I want to say there's another flashlight in it.
I believe there is. Yeah,
because I had all the found parts at one point.
Oh wow.
I mean,
if only I'd known you then.
Right? I sold it all. Although I think there's probably more accurate files out there right now.
Well, one of the most accurate right now is being done by a fellow down in Australia who goes by Jake Can Make on Instagram. And his is, without being fully functional, it's fully functional. It opens up and everything extends on it. And he has a 3D printed version of it now, because the first one he made was all metal. and it's gorgeous. And that pretty much consumed his life for quite some time. And now he has a 3D printed version. I think he's getting ready to put it up for sale.
Oh, nice.
Like the files themselves. And it's a lot of parts.
Yeah, it would be nice to be able to get the DXF files on those. Because there's a laser cutting company out in Utah that I've started using.
Yeah.
So
that could do the frame, like all the frame parts for it.
Yeah, and they could do all the bends and stuff like
that. That'd be great to be able to build one. Because I own a casting of one of the ZF1s as a pod when it's closed up. When you first see him walk up and introduce the ZF1 and it opens up, which I think that's one of the few times you actually see it closed. But it's painted in the correct colors using production-made stencils. So I have the stencil patterns available for me now. If we do a full-size open ZF1, we can go back and replicate that.
Yeah, I would like to do that again.
Yeah.
I got super frustrated. I forget Mars. I want to say that was the guy's name on the RPF, Mars.
Mm-hmm.
Out of Australia, I'm pretty sure, was doing them. And mm-hmm. I just got frustrated and sold it all because it was just sitting there.
Yeah. And it seems like a project that a lot of people start on, but then frustration kicks in.
Yeah.
Because it's such a difficult prop to make. And it's so involved because there's so many things going on inside of it. But I love that I think they built 11 different practicals of that thing.
Oh, wow.
For each function. Because they couldn't load them all the different things it could do could not be in one prop. So the flamethrower version was a separate version. The net launcher was a separate version, et cetera. And then, of course, the live fire one that he's chasing Mila Jovovich through the hotel room with is actually just a ZF1 stunt with an AK-47 stuffed in it. Because you can see the bottom of the magazine or the bottom of the magazine in one scene, and there's a hole cut in the side for the spent cartridges to eject from.
Yeah, so the one I was building, I had a airsoft AK-47 in there.
Yeah.
It was so sad buying this, you know, expensive airsoft gun to cut it all apart.
No, I actually know exactly what you're talking about, because you own a casting of one of the rifles, the Mangalore rifles.
Yes.
And you had a fiberglass copy of that made.
I did. I actually owned the production mold at one point.
Yeah. And then you handed that fiberglass copy to me to make a mold.
Yes.
Which I did after I did some restorative work to it. And admittedly, I made the mold in the wrong way and made an enormously heavy mold, which was sort of pointless. But we still got some castings out of
it. Sure.
Now, I'm in the process of basically making it to where I can build those into Hero versions. And then I'll do a V2 of that mold. That'll be much more simple to work with. And I bought an AK-47 because the Mangalore rifles, when you see them firing, and I believe they made 3 practicals, also have AK-47 stuffed inside of them. And they're just a shell around an AK-47 to make them shoot so that they have that practical effect on screen. But you can see the bottom of the magazine in one scene, and then if you look at the receiver as it fires, you can see it functioning. But I bought an airsoft AK, and I have made a plug out of its receiver so that you can see that detail in it now.
I just want to get a clip and shove the clip in there.
Just shove the magazine in the bottom so that you have that sticking out. Yeah, I don't think it's stuck out very far, but you could see, because if
you can see the bottom.
Yeah, if you're familiar with the rifle and how it looks to the folks out there in Radioland, it has a big boxy section at the bottom, and that is to hold the magazine. But if you look at the practical in one scene where you only see it once, where Bruce Willis is firing up where Chris Tucker is and shoots the area out around him so he falls down onto the table, you can see that the whole bottom of that's cut open, and it's just open. And that's because of how the AK-47 is loaded. It's so they could stick their hand in there and rock the magazine out and put a new one in.
Gotcha.
So it's got just a big hole in the bottom.
So for
that was a cool detail.
Those of you listening at home, I know enough about guns to talk to somebody who doesn't know anything about guns. Mike, on the other hand, knows everything about guns. So.
Not everything. I have a pretty decent knowledge of firearms, and it is something that I have studied a lot. But that's why I kind of tend to go into a little bit more detail about guns than.
And I'm glad because semantically, is there a difference between a clip and a magazine?
Absolutely. Yeah, there is a complete difference. So the easiest definition of a clip versus a magazine is a clip, the rounds are stored externally on it, as in there's a strip of metal that holds the cartridges.
Okay.
A magazine holds the rounds internally, as in it's a box that the rounds are that sit in with a magazine spring feeding them into the weapon.
So a banana clip is really a banana magazine.
It's actually technically just a box magazine. Mm-hmm. Banana magazine is sort of a misnomer that people associated with it because of their shape, but it's just technically referred to as a box magazine.
But that's what everybody in the 80s called it.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's fine. When people say clip or magazine, I'm not some pretentious jerk that gets mad about it. I know what you're talking about, so I just move on.
But you cringe a little on the inside, don't
at
you?
One time I did, but then I realized that it's the least important thing to get mad about. Oh, so sure. I just move on, but I know what you're I know what you're saying, so it doesn't really matter to me. But yeah, and firearms are a very important part of prop history because so many guns get used in film, and oftentimes, like in sci-fi, they get dressed up and you don't know what they are. But I love finding out what the original gun was, like with Aliens, the M41 pulse rifle. That's a Tommy gun.
Yeah,
it was originally supposed to be an MP5, but they made it a Tommy gun because 9mm. Didn't have as big a flash as 45 did.
And there's a Remington shotgun in there too, right?
I believe it's a 870, Remington 870. And then the smart weapon, the big M56 smart weapon that like Drake and Vasquez carry, is actually a German MG42 machine gun, a light or heavy machine gun, depending on how it was used, on a steady arm mount and dressed up with parts from an Kawasaki AR-125 motorcycle.
Huh.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of shit going on in that.
I do not own any guns. Well, I have a rifle because I live in the country and you know, there's animals. And it's not because I'm anti-gun. It's because I'd own all of them.
Right.
So
yeah, I own one or two, and we'll leave it at that.
So Anyhow.
Yeah, I don't ascribe a whole lot of top politics to it. They're just machines. So.
Sure.
And that's just sort of an end of it to me. I know a lot of people have issues with them, and that's fine. I don't argue with people about it. It's just everybody's an individual, so.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So what other props? What is your favorite prop from The Fifth Element?
Oh, man. You know, I think I'm always going to be kind of in love with the ZF-1 just because of its complexity and, like, its... It's this thing that kind of drives the movie in some ways. You know, the stones are freaking awesome. I love the key, the little key at the very beginning. And I don't know. It's just such a rich film with props. It's hard to pick one that's...
The prop work and the model work, like the background, the story building, the world building, all of that.
Yeah.
There's so much good stuff going on in the background. And there's so many bespoke props in the background, too, that are like his trophies, Corbin Dallas's trophies, which you don't really pay attention to them. But then when you see them up close, the detail that's in them is amazing. The tickets that they even printed out for it, like when he won his trip to Flotsam
Paradise.
Flotsam Paradise. I'd have to say that my favorite props, there's two in The Fifth Element. One of them is the Mangalore grenade, because I spent so long researching it and finding out all the different minutiae about that different prop that I've sort of gotten an obsession about it. And then the other one is all of Ruby Rod's costumes because they are all so over the top.
Right.
I love that. It was supposed to be Prince playing that
role. I totally see that. Did they ever talk to Prince about that?
I believe they did. And then I don't know the full story, but as I understand it, he just like randomly decided not to do it. And then they're like, we need someone to fill this role. And Chris Tucker did a beautiful job at it. And I'm completely happy that they brought Chris Tucker into it.
Super green.
Yeah. He was definitely super green. Way to tie that together.
I think for me, actually, the costumes are probably even more impressive than the props.
Oh, without a doubt.
You know, from the very get-go with, you know, her bandage costume to to, you know, all the way to the flight attendant's costumes, like
I'm sensing a theme.
The diva Plava Laguna.
The Plava Laguna?
You know where she got her name?
Where?
So Plava Laguna is like Serbian for Blue Lagoon.
Oh, really?
And didn't Luc Besson direct Return to Blue Lagoon?
Oh, I think he did, Oh, that's a fun little reference, isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. That's cool. The police uniforms are super impressive, too. The cops.
Yeah.
Because they make no sense whatsoever until you start to look at them and you realize that it kind of makes sense because it's all supposed to be just huge amounts of armor.
Right.
And of course, they have their riot shield on their back and a massive light on their chest. But then their helmet is just the most ridiculous thing in the world because, of course, all of the costumes were designed by Jean-Paul Gaultier for that movie. And it sort of shows.
Yeah.
Because they're all super over the top.
I love the fact that this movie has just so many quotable lines. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, that's always the, you know, is a movie good? Is like, are you going to quote it in 20 years?
Aziz Light.
So it's funny you mentioned that. So yesterday, I'm having a conversation with this guy. First time we've ever talked on the phone. And I asked him what he does for a living. He's like, oh, I design t-shirts. I'm like, I have two ideas for a t-shirt that I want.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, what are they? And the first one's an Indiana Jones one. And I'm like, but the second one, I want it for a lights company, like a place that sells lighting. And I'm going to call it Aziz Lights. And I think that's hilarious.
I think you should have those made.
I should. Somebody's got to
I'd wear one.
Design that. The other one I want to do.
With Damien. Never do it.
I should.
She's really good. Yes. So.
The other one that I want to do is one for a tribal casino,
yeah.
The Javitos Casino,
yeah.
And just have the tagline, "Worth four or so cashed in."
So terrible. You should be ashamed, but don't ever be. Oh, my God.
My two great ideas.
Yeah, no, they're good. Let's see. What else is there to talk about with the Fifth Element? I mean, besides the prop work, the costuming... there's the storyline,
yeah,
which is a bit silly when
sure,
you think
yeah.
about it, when you think it through. But one of my favorite parts about it is that the main antagonist and the main hero, of course, Gary Oldman playing Jean-Baptiste Emmanuel Zorg and Bruce Willis's Corbin
Jean-Baptiste
Dallas.
Jean-Baptiste Emmanuel Zorg.
They never even know each other exist.
Yeah.
They never meet. They are completely unaware of one another's existence, but they are the main protagonist and antagonist of the story, which I thought was kind of neat. To look back on that, they just only cross over once in the elevators, like near the elevators yeah. of Flotsam Paradise, and that's it. That's the only time they're ever within a few seconds of being on screen.
I wonder how much time they even spent on set together.
Like, I don't know.
Like, that could have been done in one day.
Yeah, that's probably a one-day shoot right there, and then everything else was separate, because yeah. they never have any other scenes together.
I think the thing that I like about it is it's you've got a female-driven storyline with a strong female mm-hmm. character that is vulnerable but doesn't need a man.
Right.
You know? Like, and I like that the direction that we're going, you know, is good or as bad as whatever anybody feels about, you know, like, the new Wonder Woman movies. I love that you know, a character can be vulnerable and cry and want someone... but still have the capability to kick ass and take care of things all on their own.
Right, they could have the desire for that yeah. connection, but not need it
right.
to be the hero.
Yeah.
Which is, I really like that as well. I really love that they pushed like the female-led action in the last episode of The Mandalorian very strongly.
Yeah.
And it was, and watching it, I didn't really think anything of it because I know some people are weirded out by that, but I watched it and I was like, this is just these characters being these characters. And it was really well done. And it was like, that's awesome just to see a whole group of ladies beating the dog shit out of a bunch of stormtroopers.
I I'm finding that, you know, like female characters are what I'm most drawn to
yeah.
in cinema or, you know, television or whatever these days.
Like, especially if they're really, really well written.
Yeah.
And I like that the writing is catching up with that too.
Yeah.
Because for the longest time, you would have strong female characters, but the writing for them would not, like, they would not write the character very
well. I think we're getting more women to write.
Yeah, we're getting more women to write, so we're getting that,
yeah.
you know, that sort of crossover, which is great. And I look forward to seeing what they do with it in the future. To continue that trend would be awesome.
I concur. And,
yes.
you know, hopefully, you know, there will be more of those movies. Like, you know, I'm looking forward to the next Wonder Woman. And Patty Jenkins is directing Rogue Squadron?
Yeah, Rogue Squadron.
Series.
Have you seen the teaser they did for that?
I did. That was awesome.
I'm not sure what the roller skating has to do with it, but I like the rest of it.
Yeah.
That was because she's roller skating all over the place.
I think there's always a reason to roller skate. Like if you
no, that's fine.
Be on roller skates, be on
I was confused skate. About it when it first went with the commercial, but with the teaser that they did.
I will have to watch that again. And
yeah.
Dig
but
into
I, it I like that she's directing Rogue Squadron. I really look forward to seeing because I think that one's Isn't that supposed to take place between episode 6 and episode 7?
I don't know, to be honest with you.
Does it feel, because I saw a timeline of it, and I felt like that's where it was supposed to be.
It's so hard to keep up with everything.
I know. There's so many of them coming out now.
It's interesting growing up, being picked on and beaten up for being a geek and a nerd, and now living in this world where, you know, you look at the top 10 movies of all time and probably 5 or 6 or 7 of them are geek nerd movies, you know?
Yeah. I didn't get beat up for being a geek when I was a kid because I was bigger than everybody, but I understand that. Like you were a bit ostracized for liking that, especially when in the time period that we were both kids.
Yeah.
And now it's the thing to do. Like, it is very much, it's sort of become cool.
Right.
To like this stuff. But then there's people like us who take it too far and just build all the stuff they see.
Yeah, I think we take it just far enough. I have a pretty concrete rule that I don't really like people that like things more than I do. Because if you like Star Wars or whatever it is more than I do, you probably need therapy.
You've taken it to an obsession level at that stage, yeah.
Although, like Star Wars, for instance, like I've never read the books, I've not really watch the cartoons, and so there's tons I miss. So.
Well, yeah, I've never seen Droids, the cartoon series. I've never seen Ewoks or the Return to Endor or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever that travesty was.
With Wilford Brimley?
Is it Wilford Brimley that's in that? Who was also in my... another guy that you've met, by the way.
Yes.
Because you've met Wilford Brimley. There's a lot of those side ones from that time period. Like, I've never seen the Holiday Special. Which I understand is dreadful.
I actually have it on VHS.
Oh, do you?
Okay, Fifth Element and Christmas Special story. So years ago...
It's a weird crossover.
No, this is the best crossover ever. So years ago, this would have been in 1999, maybe. 2000. So 2000, I was with a woman, I guess. My mom yells at me when I use the word girl. She thinks it's demeaning. But in my head, like, she was 19, so is it a woman, a girl, whatever. So I was with this girl who joined the Army, and I followed her down to Augusta, Georgia, because she was doing AIT at Fort Jackson. Fort Gordon. Jackson's in... South Carolina.
And just to jump in, those who don't know, AIT is Advanced Infantry Training.
Yes. Yeah. So individualized training.
Oh, is it individualized training for them?
Okay. Yeah. So she was doing AIT down there, and I moved into this shithole apartment. And like, I moved in, she couldn't see me for a week, so I went to Florida for a week to visit a friend of mine who is a prop builder and model maker, and actually ended up working for Lucasfilm for a while. And when I came back, somebody had broken into my apartment, stole all kinds of stuff, including every single VHS tape and DVD that I owned. Every one of them. Like, I had a big, 2 foot by 2 foot by 3 foot tall box full of these movies, and they stole all that. They also stole all of her underwear for some reason, which was totally weird. It was weird, like, what they took and what they didn't. Like, they left my computer, but they... took her underwear and DVDs. Not sure what was that about. So anyhow, so I'm on, this was, like I said, 1998, 99, and maybe 2000. It was 2000. And I've been a member of the RPF for years. And I posted on the RPF when I got back how freaking sucky it was that somebody stole all my movies. And a guy on the RPF named Matt Munson messaged me. He goes, "Hey, I'm converting over to DVDs, and if you would like, I would love to send you a box full of VHS tapes." And in that box was a copy of bootleg copy of the Holiday Special and The Fifth Element.
Oh, wow.
That's how I saw The Fifth Element for the first time.
It was a bootleg copy that was sent to you?
No, that was a proper one? That was a legit copy, but he had, it was a VHS copy, and he had
sent
me.
That Matt sent you?
That Matt sent me.
Yeah, I know Matt a little bit through the RPF.
So, and so that's one of, the 6 movies that I owned for a while.
Right.
And I've always had this habit of putting on movies while I build props, especially, like if I'm watching Star Wars, I'll watch Star Wars. If I'm doing, you know, Fifth Element. So like only having six movies, that became one of the six that I watched a lot.
Such a strange grouping.
Right? I'm curious as to what else he sent me, but those are the two that I remember was Fifth Element. Did you see it in the theater, or how did you see it?
Well, the very first time I ever saw the Fifth Element was, I want to say, it was probably 2005, 2006, and I happened to see it at Blockbuster, because Blockbuster was still a thing at the time.
I remember that.
And I was like, what is this goofy-looking movie? I'm gonna buy this, or I'm going to rent this and watch it. And I rented it, and of course I didn't take it back in time. But I sat down and watched it one morning, and I was immediately like blown away by the visuals of what I had seen. And at that time, yeah. I was not into prop making at the time. I've only actually been into prop making for about 2 years. And I was just blown away by how pretty the movie was and how weird the whole thing was. But that was my first exposure to The Fifth Element. And I enjoyed it then. But no, I didn't see it in the theater. I wished I had, truth be told.
Yeah, I saw it in my living room.
Same. I saw it in my living room in my crappy apartment, and that's just how it was. I think I was living in Milwaukee at the time.
I think Starship Troopers was probably the same thing.
I saw that in the theater. Because I remember it was a big deal when I was in high school when it came out. And I really wanted to go see it because everybody was like, ooh, Starship Troopers. So my folks dropped me off at the theater and I went to go watch it at the mall. The Upper Valley Mall Theater in Springfield, Ohio, as a matter of fact.
Nice.
Yeah, that's it's now a parking lot, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, I think in the near future, most movie malls, theaters are going to be parking
well,
lots.
Most malls will be as well because malls are terrible. I'm of the opinion that malls are just the worst places in the world.
My school, we're in a new building this year, but the last 2 years before that, we were actually in the mall.
Oh, that's
we are on the top floor of the mall, and like the space that it before us, it was like one of those for-profit colleges. That,
right. Yeah.
But before that, when I was in my 20s, it was a bar.
Nice.
So
I've gotten drunk in this school.
Well, I actually. Where my classroom was my first year there was where I stood in the mosh pit to watch the Violent Femmes.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, God, I saw the Violent Femmes as well. It was in Columbus, Ohio.
They were awesome. I want to see them again.
Yeah. So. Are they still yeah. touring at all?
Yeah, they toured 2 years ago. I think I was on vacation while they were here.
But. I love that this podcast just goes into the left field all the time.
Right?
It's the best. But we are actually now at the 43-minute mark, so that's gonna
that time.
We're gonna end up bringing this to a close. Any last closing thoughts about The Fifth Element or 2020 or anything you want to say?
I think we should put it a priority to start really thinking about building ZF1s.
Yeah, I could get behind that.
So
I really could, but I want to do it out of as many real parts as possible.
Oh, sure. Yeah, the frames, do them out of metal.
Do them out of metal, yeah. So. And, I mean, we have access to how the panels are put together because the panels for the pod are just the panels taken off the hero prop and put together. So I have a pod, and I'd like to see if we can maybe get that rolling sometime this year.
Maybe, yeah, that would be good. I think, you know, like... one thing I'd like to try to do is, like, have one big project a year. Like, it's...
Yeah, something that requires more than one person to really sort of focus on. Because we do know quite a few prop makers in this area.
Sure.
And then try and do some sort of either group build or group project to where we can all work on a piece and bring it together.
Now, you have access to more pods, right?
I do.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yes. So we can make an extra if we need to.
That would be cool.
And then cut it apart for that purpose, and I have no problems with that. I won't make them for sale because that was part of the deal to get it. So,
hence the access to them.
Hence the access to. So yeah, I could make a casting of that thing for that purpose. So because then it would be closer to accurate. But occasionally, the original panels come up for sale on the RPF or on the prop store. So every now and again, a set of panels will come up. So that might be something to keep an eye out for. Oh, goodness me. Now, if anyone's interested in finding out more about the stuff that you or I do, where would they go?
For me, on Instagram, it's Greg, G-R-E-G-G, .N-O-W-L-I-N-G is my Instagram handle.
And for me, it's at Mike's Tiny Shop on Instagram, and also on Facebook. It's facebook.com/makesthings. And if you want to find out more about this podcast and you want to follow us on Twitter or Instagram, it's at Prop History Podcast on Instagram or at History Prop on Twitter. Thank you again for listening. This has been the Prop History Podcast.
All right. Thanks.
Bye.
Bye.